Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you.
Good morning and welcome to a special Eco Wisdom Conversations Nature Inspired podcast. It's being hosted on the Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon show right here at CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby, streaming worldwide at cjsf.ca. Today you are going to hear two phenomenal leaders, developers in the nature forest medicine world. The co-founder and co-director of Eco Wisdom, Dr. Carrie Crowe, an international speaker, thought leader, nature healer expert, Carolyn Crowley. Let's get into that program now. Eco Wisdom Conversations Nature Inspired Podcast. It is being hosted on the Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon show here at CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby, streaming worldwide at CJSFCA. Today you're going to hear two phenomenal leaders, developers in the nature and forest medicine world, the co-founder and director of Eco Wisdom, Dr. Carrie Crowe, and our special guest, Carolyn Crowley, who is an acclaimed nature health expert on nature and forest therapy, who will share expert opinions and overviews on cultural appropriateness and the importance of Indigenous inclusion. We are lavishing a banquet of delectable information, and so without further ado, I'm going to have Dr. Carrie introduce others that are here in this conversation. Eco Wisdom is conversations about something that is being popularized, but people don't know the depths of. So we are going to go into helping you know and understand more about what nature and forest healing is about.
Thank you, Charlotte. And I want to say that I am so excited to have Carolyn join us today. Thank you so much, Carolyn, for being here with us. What a pleasure it was to have you come and speak to our group of trainees as nature and forest therapy guides. And it really resonated deeply. So now here we are able to spend this time with you again. So we are so pleased, as I said, to have Carolyn here. And I want to pass it over to her so she can actually introduce herself, because she's been involved in so many amazing projects doing such important work. Carolyn, welcome.
Hi, Carrie. Hi, everyone. And thank you for the invitation to share with everybody today. So my name is Carolyn Crowley. My pronouns are she and her. I was born in Mi'kma'ki territory, which is also known today as Nova Scotia. But I live in Toronto. And so Toronto, or Takaronto, has been my home since a young child. So I've been here for 50 years. My ancestry, I'm Mi'kmaq, Black, and Irish. And so I was very thankful that I had the opportunity to grow up with a deep relationship with the land, and those teachings of having a relationship filled with respect and gratitude for all that creation offers us in our day-to-day life was nurtured in me as a young child. And so I operate a business called Misanokama, and that translates from Mi'kma'ki to English to all my relations. And what that is referencing is all of our relatives that are not just human relatives, but thinking beyond the human world. And so looking at our relationships with the stones or the mineral family, looking at our relationship with the plants relatives, as well as the animal relatives, and seeing them as part of our extended family. And so that concept, all my relations, is looking at all of these beings as part of family and to treat them with the same respect and love and gratitude as we treat our human loved ones. So the work that I do focuses upon, I guess you could say reconciliation. This word reconciliation is a buzzword that's often spoken about that needs to happen with Canadians and Indigenous peoples or the state and Indigenous peoples. But it's also important to note that reconciliation also needs to happen with the land, because the land has been and continues to be greatly harmed. And so I say reconciliation because when we really look at that definition of the word reconciliation, it, when you look at the Webster Dictionary, it kind of speaks of restoring friendly relations. And if we look at history and we look at the true history of what's known today as Canada, that friendly relations was a very short period of time in history. And so, but I also use that word reconciliation to put action into. So that's where people to connect with the land, slow down, tune in through their senses. I share about the foods and medicines growing. And it's important to know that, the work that I'm doing is creating that opportunity for people to return home to that relationship, because all of our ancestors at one time and place throughout history were in a deeper, more meaningful relationship with nature or with creation that was culturally specific and unique to where people were located. But throughout history, people, many peoples have been violently severed from those relationships. So that's a little bit about the work I do, other than, other kind of conservation stewardship programming that I do, and starting that with turtle protectors, Michigan Gajajuan, which is an initiative that I started with somebody in the park where I'm living to support those turtle relatives.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for introducing us to the wonderful work that you're doing. And you'll notice, our listeners will notice that we have Laurel Goodings with us as well. She's the creative director for Eco Wisdom and a nature and forest therapy guide. And we also have Kim Dunlop, who is a leader of our mentors. And she's also a nature and forest therapy guide certified with Eco Wisdom. So you'll hear people popping in and out of conversation here as we explore some interesting ideas. I thought, maybe we could put our conversation in the context of what EcoWisdom is doing. Does that make sense, Charlotte?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. So, EcoWisdom is taking a sort of a somewhat unique approach to nature and forest therapy in that we're really interested in inclusion and accessibility. And most of our guides and trainers, including myself, we have lived experience with disability or chronic illness. And so we have not been prominent in the vision of many members of society when they think about nature. And when they think about nature guiding or nature therapy, especially providing the nature therapy, maybe as recipients of nature therapy. But we flipped that around, and we have really skilled people like Kim and Laurel here who bring their expertise and their background and their knowledge and their life experience to guiding groups of people. And so we are heavily immersed in the disability sort of realm and thinking about inclusion and expanding that circle and challenging ourselves to expand that circle in with the same kind of respect that we want as people with disabilities. And so we have, we have guides who are gender diverse. We have guides who are diverse in many, many different ways. And we are constantly challenged to think about how do we offer this training? How do we offer our programs in a way that is accessible, inclusive, respectful, compassionate, and ultimately, the work that we do with EcoWisdom is tied to the land. So EcoWisdom is run out of the EcoWisdom Forest Preserve, which is where my partner Dave and I live off-grid. And we live in what I refer to sometimes as beautiful but sometimes inconvenient ways, where we are melting the snow to get the water for a water source in the winter, for example. But it is our honor and our pleasure to do this as part of us working through our reciprocal relationship with this land that has provided me personally with so much healing, so much accompaniment, so much comfort when I need it most and when I continue to need it most. And ongoing, it's so generous, the land. And we live with the animals. So we have wild roaming moose and wolves and deer. And yeah, we've got some new birds that came this morning. Anyway, so we're living where they have allowed us to occupy this land with them. And so we're using the solar panels to power our computers to like run these programs that are sometimes often virtual, whether it's training or programming. And we come back to and we incorporate ritual that's on this land. So we'll have the fire going, for example, at the end of a program and let people just sort of absorb this land virtually. So I just wanted to sort of put that out there as the context for our conversation. And this is why, I mean, I'm just so thrilled to have Carolyn come and be part of this work that we're trying to do to understand equity, inclusion, reconciliation, how we can take these steps forward. So I just wanted to open it up and sort of see if anybody wanted to say anything about the sort of somewhat different way that we're approaching nature and forest therapy. It is different in terms of what's out there. And just anybody want to jump in?
I think you're talking about there's another I, inclusiveness. The show, this podcast series, Echo Wisdom Conversations, is being hosted by the program Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon at CJSF. And at CJSF Simon Fraser, the campus is on a mountain and there are many trails. One day I was waiting for the bus and I saw a sign that said something about bears, and I showed was talking to my brother, and he said, "Girl, you better get out of there. They got bears up there running around." But we haven't had any incidences of bears attacking you and Dave in the preserve area. And I think a different conversation, too, when we talk about inclusiveness and people with disabilities, but also intergenerational. Many colleges are now talking about neuroscience and brain plasticity. So I was really excited when I was telling someone about Eco Wisdom being aired on CJSF, they said, "Oh, you talk about brain plasticity, how things change connections. This group really gives an opportunity in its conversations to connect. So much works to talk about the differences in Gen X or this generation versus the other, but we've been able to see with the way that the presentations are made in the park. Maybe you could talk a little bit about some of the ways progress that you've had with the parks, doing things to make the parks more accessible. So again, it's intergenerational and it's something that helps connect to the tax dollars we pay. But could you mention a little bit about this inclusiveness going beyond just for seniors or for people that have lived experience of disability, how it helps even the caregivers? A lot of people, when people are discharged from, I get emotional about this, but post-surgery, I happened to sit in a hospital where six different teams of doctors after surgery came up to the people and said, they're going to have to tough out months of pain. And there's going to be, all they talked about was the pain. So I think these conversations give an opportunity to talk about some of the specific things that you learned as guides that help people to have a choice beyond these physical and addictive medicines is the only way to deal with disabilities and pain. So,
Kim. You know, one thing that comes to mind, Charlotte, is that we're flipping things around in that we're seeing ourselves as people with disabilities with capacity. And we are opening our hearts to all of the benefits of connecting with nature. And so we use nature and forest therapy guide often, peer support. Leading to people with chronic illness, people with disabilities, as somebody else is the expert who's going to fix our relationships as reflect nature. Nature is diverse. Nature is adapting. We are diverse. And we need to learn from nature to accept ourselves. And so it all comes back to the land, but we are, when we think about these medical systems and stuff like that, and, you know, there's a long history, and it's not that medicine doesn't have a role. It's when that becomes the dominant way of being in the world and society, it becomes problematic, right? So we need to understand where power lies, and we are introducing this new approach where we have guides who have personal experience with chronic illness or disabilities so that they can model and demonstrate and facilitate deep conversations about inclusion and belonging. And that's, I think those are some really big themes that came out of the research, right? Right, Kim?
Definitely. That was a huge theme in all of the research that we've done so far. And I know personally, when I think about what I've learned from EcoWisdom, from our wonderful guides and teachers, and from all the people that we've, all our peers, when I'm in nature, I forget about the labels. Things slough off, and I feel more connected than I've ever been in my life. You know, it's a huge gift, just a huge gift, and to be able to share that with others is such a blessing. And it's so individual. That's the other part, is learning how to just sit back and listen is an enormous, enormous part of the program, part of learning reciprocal relationships, just seeing that every single person is such an individual, and every person, every piece of plant and nature brings so much. It's just this enormous, phenomenal gift if we open up. When we open up.
Yeah. And I think this is where that neuroscience piece comes in that Charlotte was referring to. We talk a bit about, you know, because my background is in psychology and neurology, I reference a little bit about that. There are ways, neural pathways we can open through practices, right? But when we, and sometimes people need to hear that, but other people, it's more of a spiritual thing, or they have other, you know, once they have the direct experience in our programming, then something goes click. And they're like, ah, yeah, this is what I need in my life. But for some people, they want to hear the neuroscience piece of it. But in other situations, other settings, we don't go there. But there are these, really what we're doing is we're learning to be still. And when we learn to be still, we learn to be receptive. And when we learn to be receptive, we have this incredible, we receive. And then we have, and it just automatically leads to this tremendous gratitude, right? And as part of that, for people who have disabilities, who have been rejected and told that we're broken and this and that and we don't fit, I've just heard just in the last week now two stories of people trying to get employment, get, you know, situations, and it's like, you don't fit our box, therefore you can't fit, like go, we're not going to adjust our box size, forget it. Anyway, so given that context, it's such a gift to know that we belong, that we're okay, and that our relationship with nature can sustain us.
Okay. Carolyn, I know you've spoken about the importance of having Indigenous leaders or Indigenous teachings connected to this movement toward nature health. What are some of the experiences that you have had in connecting nature studies, forest health studies to the foundations that are there from Indigenous people?
Well, the first thing I would say in regards to inclusion is the importance of including Indigenous voices in this work, because these are the territories of Indigenous people. And a lot of the knowledge that's come through the practice of forest therapy here in the Western world, a lot of that knowledge has come from Indigenous ways of being and knowing and in relationship with the land. And so it's really important, you know, and there's a responsibility there. When, like I said earlier, talking about reconciliation, there's a responsibility to include those Indigenous voices and to acknowledge them. And so what does that look like? I know when I've attended programs or when I've offered programs, you know, sometimes, like, well, when I attend programs, what I notice oftentimes is that that perspective or those perspectives aren't included, even though they're talking about outdoor education or nature connection programming. It's very dominated by settlers, and it's really important to include others in those conversations as well. So to ensure that racialized people are included in those conversations, and bringing in the gifts of what, if we have connections to our culture, how do we bring those elements to the practice of forest therapy so that we can see those similarities, right? Because when we look at that relationship with land, you know, there's so many similarities from, you know, all across the earth of how we were in relationship. And so when I offer my programming, and sometimes when I offer programming to like newcomers, there's so many times when people will say to me, oh yes, you know, back home, this is the connection. And so you build relationships, you're connecting with one another, you're relating with one another. So I think that's really important is when we're thinking about the cultural aspects of this work, how do we find a way to bring that in and also to prioritize, you know, the Indigenous ways of knowing and being, as far as bringing in, you know, people that carry that knowledge as well.
Could you give an example of an Indigenous way of knowing and being?
Yes. Yeah, so like I said earlier, you know, seeing all of these beings as part of family, right? And so we talk a lot in the practice of forest therapy, of the act of reciprocity, right? And that reciprocity is an ancient teaching of Indigenous people since time immemorial, that importance of never taking more than what you need and always finding a way to give back, because Mother Earth is constantly giving to us and people are constantly taking from the earth. And it's just kind of like, you know, if we can think about a relationship we've been in or we've witnessed where one person's constantly giving and another person's constantly taking with little acknowledgement, without little reciprocity, that relationship is in balance. Eventually, the relationship falls apart because the one who's always giving may eventually become tired of always giving without that reciprocity or acknowledgement. And so it's no different than when we see our relationship with the land, with, you know, with creation, that so when I think about that, that importance of reciprocity, of acknowledging and giving back is really key for what we're receiving.
And you mentioned something about not taking more than what you need. During this season, where there are these weather emergencies all over, and people are coming, some people are coming to donate food or donate their skills, making food for people who are stuck on the road. And then there are the people that are just piling their cars up, taking more than is needed. So what are, how do we, how do, I'm asking this to other people, how do we challenge or move to the souls of people so that we do get that principle of giving back, but also not taking more than what's needed? If people are giving away three tires and you take five, and you've got a four-car vehicle. But how can we, is it through stories? What are some ways we can help draw people's attention to that being unnatural and unhealthy for us?
Charlotte, I just want to jump in and say, echo what Carolyn was saying, that the central importance of bringing in Indigenous perspectives and voices in all of this. And I think when I think about the scenario that you presented, I think about Robin Wall Kimmerer's term enoughness. And we spend quite a bit of time exploring her book, Braiding Sweetgrass. And in our programs, we explicitly reference who we are learning from and where these are, concepts are coming from. Robin Wall Kimmerer is an Indigenous biologist and a brilliant scientist and thinker and communicator. And we talk about this concept that she presents to us of enoughness. And we find that when we're in this calmer state of receptivity and we are receiving things from the earth, they're not things that we're buying. They're not things that cost a lot of money. They're not things that are damaging the earth to obtain, right? They're not things that we get and then compare ourselves to other people because their thing is shinier than ours. It's the whole package, right? So we receive and we see ourselves reflected. And it goes so deep and it can be so satisfying. And we come to understand that, it's beyond gifts. It's like I'm trying to find the word, but it's like it's enoughness, right? And I find that living on the forest preserve is that, we live in this tiny cabin. We actually don't have an insulated floor. We have to collect 72 bags of leaves to put around the perimeter to just and put up the snow around the edge. And it's a lifestyle, but it's enough. And so I think I just wanted to say, that's what I think of when I think about, competition and wanting things. And I think it's important to look at power. Where is power? And who's driving that, right? And there's so much wisdom in Indigenous approaches to life, thought, relationship with the earth. And these are the kinds of things we need to educate ourselves on. And I see myself as just, I continue to strive to learn. I am no expert. I continue to learn, and I'm very grateful to the Indigenous teachers that spend time with me and members of EcoWisdom community, particularly the settlers who are struggling and endeavoring to find our place in reconciliation.
Yeah,
Kim.
I was going to just chime in just with something that you had said there. Is like when I think about this not taking more than what we need and that importance of reciprocity, like I see it as relationship, right? Because relationships are the foundation of everything in our lives, our relationship to ourselves, each other, with the land, and that importance of having healthy relationships. And so when I think of like from what elders have shared with me in my life, and when I think about this concept of not taking more than what we need. And, like you were saying, Charlotte, people today who are hoarding and that sort of thing. So when I think about this, it is because in this a lot of times in this Western context, a lot of people are disconnected from community or sense of community. And so when we think about Indigenous peoples, since time immemorial, living in community, right? Looking out for each other. Right. So, traditionally when and still today, when the hunters go out, they're not just hunting for themselves, they're hunting for community, right? To feed the elders in the community who may not have people who can go and hunt for them and so forth. And so it's really about looking out for each other. And when we because we live in this capitalistic society, we are conditioned from a very young child, to be very individualistic. Competition starts in the classroom. That's what I wanted to share.
I think that gives us three R's: reconciliation, reciprocity, and respect. With children, kind of so much of the modern family and shows around the modern family, too, a lot of emphasis has been made on rudeness or not having a grandparent or a grand aunt or a grand uncle in the home. Do you see things where out in society or within the community, people are doing things that unify and bring children in contact with older people?
Well, when I think about indigenous communities, that importance of it being intergenerational, right? Because you have the elders who carry that wisdom, who should pass it on to the younger generations. They, you know, whether it's teachings, ceremonies, language, and so forth. So all gatherings are intergenerational. You know, we're thinking about all of those ages, and you know, nowadays you'll hear about some programs where there's homes for seniors, and they're building daycares in the same location to build those connections, because there are so many gifts that we all carry at different stages in our lives, right? And it helps us to, you know, have someone older in our lives who can help kind of create that guidance or share that wisdom, and also to have those young ones in our lives, right? To really stay connected to that inner child, or to find that joy, or hold on to that curiosity in our lives.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you could, if we could segue into some of what you spoke to our students about, which was the tea ceremony.
Yeah, so like when I think about the tea ceremony, and I know that you do it differently as far as, you know, you've adapted it to, with the mandalas. And so the one thing when I, so for people who might not know, I was a forest therapy, a trainer and mentor for 5 years with an association. And during the time when I would teach that particular course or session, I emphasized the importance of the relationship, right? And really kind of look at how do we build healthy, respectful relationships with each other. It's no different than how we do that with the land. Right? Relationships take time. We can't rush into a relationship. You know, you might had a, maybe, you know, you can reflect upon a time you had a romantic or romance, and it was so fast. And then, you know, after a period of time, you're like, whoa, what was I doing? What was I thinking? And because you get so caught up in it. And, you know, there's teachings from many nations that talk about that, about relationships, right? And about building relationships. And it takes time to build relationships. And so amongst Indigenous peoples, we have ways in our, in through ceremonies, how to build those relationships with the land, right? With all those relatives. So that's the first thing, is finding a way to build that relationship in a more intimate way. And I know you do that throughout your course, but the one thing that I emphasize when we think about the very basics, you know, like when we got onto this call, I was kind of like, hey, who is everybody, right? First thing, introductions, right? So think about when we go out to the land, right? And if we're just like, hey, and we're just talking, and we're just harvesting, or you know, for whatever purposes, and we haven't even introduced ourselves, we haven't even done the very first thing, is introduce ourselves. Right. And so that's really important. And like, you know, when I'm going, when I travel, when I, wherever I go, it doesn't matter where it is, I always take a moment to, when I arrive, to acknowledge and introduce myself to the place, to the land, to the beings, because that's really important. Because I would never go into your house, right, and just walk in and get comfortable and not even acknowledge you or introduce myself to the people that I don't know. That would be considered really disrespectful. So, you know, finding that way to introduce oneself. And there's no right or wrong way of doing it. This is like an intimate relationship between the individual and with all of creation, or with Mother Earth. And, you know, the other thing so one thing to speak about that is like when we're harvesting from the land, whether we're harvesting to make a tea or to make a mandala or for other purposes, is also finding a way to ask permission. And what does that look like? Right, you know, so like some people might say, hey, can I, like, it's okay to harvest this plant. Am I okay to harvest you? And, you know, it's not like I'm hearing like yes or no. It's almost like a feeling inside of my body, right? That makes me feel like, okay, this feels right. And I'm following other protocols too when I'm harvesting that are really important, right? Because like I said, you don't take more than what you need because you think about all the other beings. And it's not just other humans, but it's all the other beings who may rely upon that plant relative. And, you know, that importance of permission is so key because whoever that we're engaging with as far as that plant, if we're going to use them for medicine, that medicine's going to be much more potent if we have built a relationship with that plant. And so kind of sharing a story when I was leading a training about the permission, there was one guide in training who went out to do some harvesting because we were doing the tea ceremony and they went out to harvest. And I had invited people to find a way to, you know, ask permission, introduce themselves and all that. And this one person who ended up being my mentee, and I have permission to share her story, she was telling me that when she went out to harvest, she was just about to go and cut. She completely forgot everything, right? She was just so excited to get in there to harvest the plants. And then all of a sudden she heard, just, right? And it made her stop for a second. And then she went to go cut again, and she heard this, just. And all of a sudden something registered in her brain. And she noticed this little insect, probably a little beetle, on the plant. And this beetle was making this sound like tis. But she kind of felt like the beetle was like tis, like shame on you for, you know, just going right in there and forgetting, right, to introduce yourself and to ask permission, right? So she kind of interpreted that for herself in that way. So that gave her that moment to pause, to reflect, and then to move forward with building that relationship. And so, and that is important because when we go out to build those relationships, you know, we learn so much more from those plant relatives. And so during one of the trainings as well, there was an individual, a woman who got sick, fever, chills. And so she had a blanket on, and this was a forest therapy training that we were actually at a camping venue. So we were outside. So it was in the middle of the summer. And so what I went and did, it was I went out into the land, I offered tobacco because that's something that's been taught to me. I introduced myself and I asked the plants if I can harvest them. And there was a number of plants that I was harvesting in a particular area to make a tea for this person. And what happened was, you know, she drank the first cup and, you know, she removed the blanket. And then she drank the next cup. And then by the time she finished the pot, which was within the hour, like the color came back into her skin. She looked fine. She was like, she wasn't having any symptoms anymore. And everybody was like, wow, Carolyn, what did you put in that tea? And, you know, I said, it's not about what I put in the tea. First of all, it's who I put in the tea, right? So thinking about how we speak about these relatives. And then also, it wasn't just about harvesting those plants. It was about that relationship. I introduced myself. I asked permission. I asked them. I let them know why I was harvesting them, right? To make a tea for someone who was feeling sick. And gave that tobacco, that offer of reciprocity. And so even after this individual, she was feeling better, I actually went back to those plants and thanked them again to let them know she was feeling better. Because that's what I would do for a friend. If a friend gave me guidance or advice and I used it, I would go back and thank them again. Like, yeah, it worked out. I, you know, I'd kind of give them a follow-up as to what happened. So I think that's really, really key when we're thinking about, you know, building the relationship with the plants, thinking about even if you know the languages of the territory of where you live. One piece of reconciliation is maybe learn some of the plant names in the languages of the territories where you're residing. And because those languages, indigenous languages, those words tell you a story about who that plant is. It, you know, so indigenous languages are very different from English. So it gives you a story, and that story is relational. And actually, the name of the plants will typically tell you how they were traditionally
Well, we've had two wonderful, we had a plan, and then we have the icing on the cake. And that given us that simple thing that we could do in going out to harvest, going out and acknowledging the plants, something we haven't, I haven't thought about. I mean, I've sometimes given thanks for how I feel after, but to the plant itself, that's a really rich teaching that we can build into the activities that we do as guides. I think as we're running toward the end of the hour, we want to connect, Carrie, with the tea ceremony, how we are going to do this closing and the relevance of the ceremony that we do.
Well, I'll say a few words and then I'll pass it on to Carolyn. I think in general, in our society, we don't have enough ritual. And ritual offers us an opportunity to slow down, to be together, to be in relationship, to connect with ourselves, the present moment, the land, the stone, the air, the water. And so I think, ritual is really important. And in our nature and forest therapy programming, we often end with a ritual. It's very common for people to end with some variation on tea ceremony. Again, I think it's important to bring in, if you're alluding to Indigenous practices, to bring in an Indigenous teacher. I have been in one situation where we brought in, there was someone who came and taught about Chinese tea ceremony, and that was really interesting as well. So to just tie it down explicitly to the cultural traditions and places where these practices came from, I think is really important. Carolyn mentioned that with eco-wisdom, sometimes we modify the tea ceremony. Interestingly, when we offer programs online, we do the tea ceremony. And when it's like minus 30 or something or 20, I'll throw the tea in the air and it will freeze. Things like that. So we do the tea ceremony when we're online, and I talk about where usually I collect from particular cedars. I talk about where the cedars live, and my relationship with those cedars, and my process. And then I talk about the tea, and then I talk about the scent and the taste, and I share it virtually online. But when we're doing in-person programs, we do a variation on that, which is we call it like a mandala making, which is more accessible to people who have physical disabilities and may not be able to hold a hot cup of tea. But I wanted to pass it back to Carolyn, because I think the same thing you were talking about around approaching, whether it's a pine cone or a leaf or stone, asking permission to obtain, to collect, to harvest, and then to build a connection with that item, and then in relationship, and then to offer it back into a collective in the same way that tea is a collective of things that we then incorporate into our bodies. This is, we bring our the items that individually we've connected to and we've had been in relationship with, and we create something collective at the end. And this is a ritual that we have done, used in our face-to-face programming that we've found to be a variation that's more accessible to our participants. But I want to pass it back over to Carolyn just to talk a little bit more about the importance of ritual, what it could look like, what you think of our modification.
Yeah, no, I think it's great to be able to modify, right, and to adapt to suit the needs of people who are participating in any sort of programming. So I think that's really great and very creative. I'd be curious to know the what happens with these beings if they're like a, if they're a leaf or a pine cone and they're being brought to a place. When you were sharing that, I was kind of thinking, wow, there's little critters, little beings in those leaves and those pine cones and such. And so I was just curious, they're probably wondering, wow, where are they going? It's this big, far journey kind of thing, right? On an adventure, right? So I think it's really beautiful to be able to find ways to still connect with the land. And when I think about that relationship piece, and ritual, Rituals have existed amongst all of us since time, for thousands and thousands of years. And, a lot of people have been disconnected from their cultural rituals, right, throughout history. And that also kind of coincided with that severing of relationship with land as well. And we can still see rituals today amongst, religious peoples, spiritual peoples, and then there's other kinds of rituals that people have that have created. But it's really when we have something to kind of put a close to something like a forest therapy experience, finding a way to kind of, bring everybody's hearts and minds together, right, as we close, and that opportunity to have reflection as well for the experience, and that opportunity to offer any gratitude that we may be having at the end for the experience, because it creates that opportunity, not only for us to share with one another, but also to be witnessed by each other, but also be witnessed by the land, right? Because those relatives are also in circle with us or with us, when we're on the land doing those sorts of activities, or they've been brought inside with us when we're out on the online. And so, finding a way to also connect with that individual being, whether that being is a plant, a leaf, or a stone, because through Indigenous ways of knowing, there is an intelligence or an awareness or a consciousness amongst all of creation. And so we speak with the stone relatives or the mineral family, right? We see them as alive. And so, people might not think about speaking to a pine cone or to a stone, whereas they might feel more comfortable speaking to a living plant. But it's through Indigenous ways of knowing, all of these beings are part of our family, right? Because they're part of Mother Earth. And, we see those stone beings or those minerals as the ancient ones. They hold the stories of the land. And when we're there gathering together to share our stories of our experiences at the end of a tea ceremony, that helps to build that relationship with ourselves as well. So, because that practice of story is also an ancient practice. And, sometimes I've done things where, like, if we couldn't drink the tea for whatever reasons, instead of having tea, I have either white pine needles, and I guide them through a sensory experience with the white pine needles instead of actually drinking tea. And so that's another way to be able to adapt. But I think it's really important to find ways to bring rituals into our lives, because they can be very supportive.
As you were speaking, Carolyn, I was thinking about the closing ritual as a form of incorporation, mm-hmm. and the body corporeal. So we have tea, and it enters the body. It's like this relationship, elements of the relationship entering our nostrils as scent and our mouths as taste and into our bodies. But the ritual itself, whether it's tea ceremony or mandala, or a sensory experience with white pine needles, it really, like, and when I think about our Accessible Nature Wellbeing programs, which are 2.5 hours long, right? So people have spent time together. And by the time we come to that 2.5 hour point, people need that opportunity to let it settle into their bodies, mm-hmm. into who they are and how they are. And we always end and conclude our programs with caring for the earth, a statement around caring for the earth, and how we can take this relationship further in terms of caring for the earth. We start talking about the land at EcoWisdom, and we end with talking about caring for the earth, brings it right back. But it's that settling into the body, settling into the moment, and allowing ourselves to be transformed, allowing our hearts to break open, and maybe feel the pain of colonization, feel the pain of destruction of the earth, feel that, and feel the potential for the beauty the transformation, the collection, the community, and what's possible. When we feel resourced, we feel that sense of enoughness, and we're ready to engage in reconciliation and caring for the earth and caring for ourselves.
I am so grateful for the R's that we have got through this eco-wisdom conversations today. We have reconciliation, reciprocity, respect, relationship, and ritual. These are things that certain people that make cartoons about nature adventures can't really touch. We really have something that we can share with small children, we can share with teens, we can share across generational and racial lines. So I'm so thankful for these conversation that we've had today. We do want to take a minute for each of you, for Kari and for Carolyn, to say how people can contact you online or contact you through social media.
Carolyn, do you want to go first?
Sure. So you can find me Turtle Protector. .com, or if you're on Instagram, Turtle Protectors High Park. My website is www.misinokama, so misinokamaq.com. And you can also Google me, and you'll see some of the things that have come up. One thing I just wanted to mention, like I kind of touched upon it, but that importance of including Indigenous voices, like the curriculum.
One of the things that I found, Carolyn, in the training that I received was that there was mention of the four directions. There was mention of tea ceremony, but there was no direct link to where it came from. And I know some of these things may have Celtic roots. Some of these things may have North American Indigenous roots, but it was just all nowhere. I had nowhere to ground it. You know, sometimes we learn things that we didn't expect to learn. In my training, I learned some things. And one of the things was, well, to reach out to Indigenous teachers and experts like yourself in nature and forest therapy to help us along our journey. And one of the things that we've done is we've been really direct in terms of referencing where things are coming from. And also very clear on what we teach and what we don't teach and who where we bring in Indigenous leaders to teach us and to commit to like just ongoing reflection and change and expansion and self-examination and, with humility. So if there's anything else you want to add to that, Carolyn, about how a nature and forest therapy, like you want to give us some tips on how we can expand that or move forward or in general, when people are learning about nature and forest therapy?
I would say like oftentimes, like, yeah, it's great to be able to bring somebody in and to speak and share that's Indigenous. That's important. But also important to build relationship with that individual. So like when I think about you and I, Carrie, like, you know, we've been on this bit of a journey together, through emails and and doing the session with the participants in the program. So we're building relationship with each other. But there's times where people will just bring in someone and it's just kind of like a checkbox and there's just like a one-off kind of thing. And I think that if someone's going to be really serious about reconciliation or reparations, really put in the work, right? It's important to put in that work of learning the true history of what's known today as Canada, learning or building relationships with Indigenous community members. You know, maybe go to the powwows. Powwows are generally open to everybody. Go to Indigenous-led community events to support them and so forth. And start to build those relationships. And if you go to those events in your where you live, on a consistent basis, people start to recognize you, right? And you start to build those relationships. So that way it feels less extractive. Like, here, I'm going to come in. You're going to pay me still. So that's fine. But it just still feels like slightly extractive. Whereas, if you're building relationship, there's something more there. there with it. So I really emphasize that importance of building authentic relationships with Indigenous community members, and to learn the history of where they're located to, learn the names of the places of where they're located.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
And that just encaptures everything you've said about relationships in general, right? With the plants, with the relationship is what is important, not that you just saw that or checked it or.
Yeah, exactly.
Really nice.
I'm going to go back to saying thank you for being a part of Ecowisdom Conversations. The conversations, when people are hearing, sometimes CJSF have played over some of our shows, and people said, who are those people? Why are they so excited about nature? Or, I'm happy to know that it's not just on New Age. The people have put nature into so many boxes. So I thank you for that authenticity that guides have expressed about the program, and Carrie, in your developing and ever expanding, that this is a program. Each time, each set of guides learns something that we can build into the next group, the next set of training. And would you, kind of in our closing, tell people about the training that is coming up, or how people can get involved with EcoWisdom?
Sure. EcoWisdom has a website, ecowisdom.ca. I'm also on Instagram. So it's EcoWisdom Forest Preserve with underscore in between. Our next training cohort starts April 1st. It's a 6-month training program. It's very flexible because we are committed to accessibility and inclusion. As it turns out, it's also very helpful for people who are caring for young children, caring for elders, who also need flexibility in the way they undertake their training. We also find that people are on their identity journeys. And because we're so welcoming and we're so inclusive, it's a nice, comfortable space, we have been told, for people to do that while they are being supported through their mindful nature connection practices. So it's a very comprehensive training. It's online, with an online unit. And then we also have live sessions, and we also have mentors. My partner Dave and I are both educators, so it has a lot of thought put into how people learn, alongside a lot of flexibility so that it's inclusive and accessible. And we have scholarships too, so we understand that there are certain groups of people that experience economic hardship and barriers in society. So we have scholarships available, and we emphasize the use of the guide training for peer support and social and environmental justice. So please check us out. We have on our website, if you go under services, you'll see training, and then you'll see our brochure, the fee schedule, the application link. Everything is there. It's pretty straightforward. And I should say that we are filling up, actually. So I've had quite a bit of interest this time around, which is great.
Well, this was a great way to end the day, a great way to spend your time. So I'm so happy that Eco Wisdom Conversations was able to take part in the Suluau, the Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon What You've Heard show. So I will see you again next week at 10. But you know what I say? When people ask me what time it is, I say it's always love time, poem time.
Love time, poem time, love time, poem time, love time, poem time, time for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time, time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time, time for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes, and play bassoon. Love time, poem time, time for poems, poets, and singers. Time to untie all life's ringers. Poem time, love time, time for you.